All right, then we'll say good morning. So today's daf is Kuf, but we left off on Tzadik Tes Amud Beis. So let's begin. So we left off at Bayi Rava. So it's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines up from the bottom. We'll just, this first round line is Rava. Bayi Rava. Rava asked the following question. So, oh, thank you. The shiur is sponsored by Mrs. Morrison for the yahrzeit of her father, Yitzchok ben Reb Nissen, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah.
Amen. Thank you.
So Rav asked the following question. Zorak daf v'nach agabi yesedos mahu. So it's an interesting case. Let's say you have pillars that are 10 tefachim high, but do not have the area of 4 tefachim. Okay? And what happened? You throw a board, that has an area of 4 tefachim on top of the pillars. So now, what's interesting about this case is what's going to happen. When the board ultimately comes to rest on the pillars, what's going to happen? Yeah. You're going to have an area of a reshus hayochin. The question is, at the moment that the pillar lands, excuse me, at the moment that the board lands, so now what we essentially have is a reshus hayochin occurring at the same moment that the item is transferred into this new domain. Since we spoke about this shala yesterday, this is the din of simultaneity. What happens when a reshus is created in the very moment that the item is transferred? So the Gemara says, "Mahu, my kami boile." So what's the shayla? Hanochas chayfetz va'asiyas mechitza b'hadi hadadi kas. So hainad Rabbi Yochanan. So the Gemara says the same question from yesterday's daf. Right, this has to do with the case of hanochas chayfetz where the item comes to rest va'asiyas mechitza, literally, and the making of the partition, or in this case, the finishing of the reshus occurs at once. So this is the same shayla that Rabbi Yochanan had. So the Gemara says, no. Ki kami boile the Rava. What's the case? The question is according to Rava. For example, kigon. The Zorak daf the chifetz al gabov mai. So the Gemara refines case, and this is quite interesting. Let's say, so again, you have the pillar that's 10 tefachim high, and you throw a board, and on top of the board is a kli. So what happens now, you're managing to balance all this, but you are throwing the board with the kli on top, and the board with the kli on top, sounds like from the circus, right? The board. The board with the kli on top lands on top of the pillars. So the Gemara says the following: Kevan de Bahadodi Adodi Kasu Kanochas Chifetz VaAsias Mechita Dami. Do we say that since it's simultaneous, so therefore again you're not really chayiv because ultimately it's as if the item comes to rest before the actual new reshus is created? O Dilma Kevan de Lo Efshar de Lo Midla Porta VaHader Nayich KaAsias Mechita VaAnochas Chifetz Dami. On the other hand, so maybe the following, this is quite interesting, that there's no question that when the item's coming down, the board with the kli on top, it's impossible that the kli doesn't move around a little bit. So that one can make the argument that the board first comes to rest, and then what? And then the kli is settled on top of it. In which case, then, the reshus would have been created first, and the kli would have come to rest afterwards, in which case it would be chayiv. To which the Gemara says, Teku. Amirava. Pshita li mayim agabi mayim, hainu hanachas. So Rava says, now the Gemara raises another interesting question. So Rava says, water on top of water, which means what? What Rava is asking is, if you go ahead and you take water, you draw water, is that called an akira? Is that called, because remember, akira means lifting something up from its place of rest, from its place of, this is maybe the wrong word, but you understand what I mean, from the place where it is at rest. So the shayla is water on top of water, being that it's moving around, is that called an akira? So the Gemara says, Rava says yes. So Rashi says hanu hanachasan v'natal miktasan v'hotzi havi akira. So Rava says if you take water from on top of water, that's the akira because this is the manner in which the water is at rest. Egos al gabi mayim. What happens if you have a nut floating on top of water and you pick up the nut? Lav hanu hanachasan. That is not called an akira. Rashi says, "Lav hainu anachasan." Literally, this is not its place of rest. The imnat lo misham lav akirahi. The water, the nut on top of the water, is not considered to be at rest, and therefore, if one lifted it up, that would not be considered a valid akira. Boy, Rava. So based on this, Rava says, "Egos bikli, the kli tzafa gabi mayim." So what happens if you have a nut in a utensil? A nut in a utensil, and the utensil is floating on the water. Mahu. Do we say we go after the nut? And technically speaking, the nut is at rest because it is at rest in a kli. Or maybe or maybe we look at the kli and the kli is not at rest because it's floating on the water. And we'll say, lest you think that this is a little bit of a crazy case and who cares, what the Gemara is really trying to figure out is how do you define at rest? So there could be many applications of this concept. How do you define the concept of an item being at rest? Is it limited to the actual immediate circumstances of the item, or do we look at the general circumstances? So the Gemara says, Teiku. The truth is, we're not exactly sure in this particular case. Shemen agavi mayim, machlokis Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri v'Rabbanan. If you have oil on floating on top of wine, so that's the machlokis Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. I mean, what the Gemara is asking over here is, what happens if you have, Rashi says, shemen agavi yayim v'inyan Shabbos. So the question would be, let's say, for example, if you have oil floating on top of wine, and you were to pick up the oil, you were to skim off the oil, would that be called an akira or not? So the Gemara says the following: it's machlokis Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Rabbanan. What's machlokis? This not shemen shetzaf agabe yayin. If you have oil floating on top of wine, v'naga tvul yom b'shemen. The Rabbanan says it's not a Shabbos case right now. And what happens? A tvul yom. Now remember, what is a tvul yom? A tvul yom is an individual who went ahead and was tamei, went to the mikvah, but requires her of shemesh. It requires sunset in order to go ahead and become tahor. So the question is, so if the tvul yom touches certain items, specifically food items, he can convey tumah to those particular items. So the interesting question is like this. Let's say the tvul yom touches the oil that's floating on top of the wine. So the oil is going to be tummy. That we know. What about the wine? So the Gemara says, lo pasal ela shemen. So so the Rabbanan will say that halacha lemaisa, if the tvul yom touches the oil, he only was metame the oil, not the wine, which tells us what? That there's not a chibur, there's not a connection between those two items. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri omer, shnehem chibur ze lo ze. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri would say, no, they are connected to each other. So Rabbi will say, what does this do le'inyan Shabbos? Take a look at Rashi. So Rashi says the following. Rashi says, shnehem chibur, dohavi kechad, v'nifsal af hayayin, u'le'inyan Shabbos nami, rabbanon havile ke'egos agabi mayim, u'l'rabbi Yochanan havile ke'mayim agabi mayim. So Rabbi say, here's what's interesting. So therefore, according to the rabbanon who hold, that when you touch the oil, the wine doesn't become tamei. So we view the oil as what? As floating on top of the wine, which means that it's not at rest. There's not a chibur. Therefore, if you were to pick up the oil on Shabbos, that would not be called an akira. As opposed to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, he holds that there is a chibur. They are connected. Therefore, the oil is at rest. And if you were to pick up the oil, that would be a bona fide act of akira. I'm sorry? It's not a mixture. They're two distinct things. Bora is only a mixture. I'm sorry. I don't know what's with the vinegar salad dressing.
You have to shake it up, though.
So what do? You mix it up. Well, I mean, what's the question?
Oil floats on top of vinegar and salad dressing. You eat it. So you have now oil and wine, and you skim off the oil, presumably to use that?
Well, it does. Who cares? What does it matter why you're using it? Well, it's not Bora, because right now they're independent entities. Bora is only when there's a mixture. So once the oil is on top and the wine is on the bottom, by definition, that's not borer. That's what the Gemara is only asking in terms of, is it an akira? So the only way it's an akira is if it's connected to the item below it. So boy. Sorry, no boy. Amrabai. Bor birshu sarabim amuka asara urachava shmora. So that's another interesting case. If you have a barish tzorabim that is 10 tefachim deep and 8 tefachim wide, a space of 8 tefachim, v'zarach l'socha machatzeles, and you throw into it, machatzeles is as a mat, literally a mat. So that halacha is chayiv, okay, because you transferred an item from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. Now, both sides, the chiddush over there is what? Is that obviously if you throw in a mat, the mat itself also has, let's say, a certain thickness. So by definition, so let's say it lands on its flat side. So now, technically speaking, you no longer have a bar that is 10 tefachim deep, right? But nevertheless, you do. Why? Because remember, the only time the question comes up that if you throw in the item, it diminishes the shear of the Rosh Sayachid, is if you intend to leave the item there. Like the case we saw yesterday, we're throwing in the clod of dirt, where the assumption is that you're going to leave it, that could be mevatel, the shear of the rishos. But the machatzeles is not bottled to the pit, and therefore again, you'll be chai for otzah. But listen to this. Chilka b'machatzeles, potter. I will say, what happens if you split the bar? You split the bar with the mat. Meaning what? Let's say you lower the mat in, and the mat serves as a divider in the middle of the bar. So in that case, the Gemara says you're Pater. Why Rabbi say? Because this is quite interesting. Because essentially what you've done is you have deconstructed a reshus. Why have you deconstructed a reshus? Because the assumption is that the mat has a certain thickness, which means now you have two boros. And neither of those boros has the requisite shear. Why? Because again, remember, you're only dealing with the space of eight tefachim. And if the mat is in the middle and it takes up some space, it means that each bar is what? Less than four tefachim. So therefore, technically speaking, in that case, you would be putter for hotzah, for transferring an item. So also, according to Abaye, who holds that when you put in this mat, so the mat goes ahead and deconstructs the reshus, right, negates the dimensions of the reshus ayachid, then all the more so going back to yesterday, when you throw in the cloud of dirt, remember that case, where I have a bar that's 10 tefachim deep, and then I throw in a cloud of dirt that's, let's say, 4 tefachim wide and one tefach thick, I throw that in, then certainly halacha maaseh, that would be mevatel the mechitza. V'Rav Yochanan d'miboy lechuya machatzelas pshita d'lo mevatla mechitza. But according to Rav Yochanan, who wasn't even sure in the case of the cloud of earth, would certainly hold that what? That in the case of the machatzelas, which is really a foreign object, certainly that would not go ahead and be mevatel the mechitza. When he says mechitza, what he means is the dimensions of the reshus. But Amr Abaye, and Abaye says, Bar b'reshus harabim amukas harachav rabah. So Abaye says, if you have a bar in reshus harabim that's 10 tefachim deep and 4 tefachim wide, melea mayim, if it's filled with water, v'zarak l'sochim, you throw an item into it, chayiv. You are chayiv for that to b'sar, why? For an active hotzah. Alright, so the Gemara says, look at Rashi, chayiv. Rashi says, v'lo amrinan kevan de malehu, lo havi reshus hayachad, de mevata lehu mechitzos. So we don't say that since the pit is filled with water, that the water negates the mechitzos. We say, even though there's the presence of the water, the dimensions of the reshus are still there, and therefore we chayiv for an act of hotzah. And we'll say, again, don't confuse this with a body of water. Bodies of water we'll get to actually in the next, in two Mishnayos from now, which has separate dinim. This is a bar that's filled with water. And the point that the Bryce is making, that Abai is making over here, is that the water does not negate the dimensions of the mechitzos. And therefore, you'd be chayiv. However, melea peros v'zarach l'socha, but if you had a pit that was filled with fruit and you threw an item into it, potter. You are potter. Why? My taima. Mayim lo mevatli mechitzta. So water is not mevatli mechitza. Why, Rabbi Osei? Because technically speaking, things could sink down even below the water. Meaning the area below the water, the entire area, is still usable, so to speak. Meaning the item could sink down to the bottom. Peros mevatli mechitzta. When it comes, if the bar is filled with fruit, then that fruit really preclude the item from going anywhere within the bar. And therefore, again, they will take away the dimensions of the reshus, and you will not be chayef for otzah. Tanya Mihaki writes that supports this. Hazorik mina yam li isracha, umina isracha liyan. If one throws from the sea to isracha, isracha is literally like a highway, a major street. Actually, the Mishnah called it before a isracha. Umina isracha liyan. Potter Reb Shimon Omer im yish b'makom shazarak amok asara berachav arba chay. So we'll see this later on. That the reason why you're not going to be chay for transferring from a yam from a sea is because the sea is like a carmelis. Right, but the reason why the Gemara is quoting this over here is because Reb Shimon says that if you're standing in the water in a place where there is a depth ultimately of 10 tefachim in a space of 4 tefachim, you would be chayiv. The point the Gemara is making over here is that even an area that's filled with water can still have the dimensions of a reshus hayachid. Whether or not we pass it like that in terms of the yam, we'll see. It's not really important for the psak right now. What's important just to show is that halacha l'maaseh, if you have a bar that's filled with water, the existence of the water does not negate the dimensions of the bar. Says the Mishnah. Hazorik arba amos b'kolsa. So we'll say, this is finally, we've seen this Mishnah quoted so many times throughout this Masechta, but here is the actual Mishnah. Hazorik arba amos b'kolsa. Someone standing in Rosh Sarabim, and they throw an object, and the object travels dalet amos, and it lands by a wall. It lands by a wall. So the Gemara says, l'malame asar tefachim. If it lands in the area of above 10 tefachim on the wall, then kizorik ba'avir. Then it's as if you threw it in the air, which means, because remember, above 10 tefachim in Rosh Sarabim is makom p'tur. is an exempted area. Lamata min asar tefachim, however, again, below 10 tefachim, kizorik ba'aretz. It's as if you're throwing it on the earth and you would be chayiv. Hazorik ba'aretz arba amos chayiv, what this means is literally someone who just throws an object 4 amos and it travels 4 amos on the ground, you're chayiv. V'holonach, so the Gemara says, aye, but one second, what's the case of the wall? The item didn't come to rest. And I will say, what's interesting about this is the following. If you look at Rashi, okay, maybe it was Rashi earlier. So what the Gemara is really asking over here is, V'holonach means, if the item doesn't come to rest, is it not bouncing back a little bit? Actually, we saw it before in yesterday's daf. If the item's bouncing back a little bit, then halacha l'maaseh, it really hasn't traveled the full dalet amos. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yochanan bidvela shmeinashin. So we've already seen this a number of times. What are we dealing with over here? We're talking about a situation over here of a cake of pressed figs, which is schmaltzy, and therefore, if you throw it, it sticks to the wall. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Chiyah, Zarak l'malo me'asara. The holcha, okay, so Rabbi says, therefore, the first thing that the Gemara does is it just qualifies the case. That Azorik d'arba amos b'kosel is talking about a case where halacha l'maaseh I threw a cake of pressed figs, not dates. And it rested against the wall, it got stuck against the wall, and therefore the Mishnah says, if it's above 10 tefachim I'm potter, below 10 tefachim I'm chayiv. So now the Gemara goes on, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amar Rav Chiyah, Zarak lemala me'asara v'holcha v'nacha b'chor kolshu. So what's an interesting case over here? Let's say I threw the object, lemala me'asara, but the object comes to rest in a chor kolshu, in a hole. So the shaila now is, what have I done? So the Gemara says, bana l'machlokes, this touches on the machlokes, Rabbi Meir v'Rabbanan. According to Rabbi Meir v'Rabbanan, why? What does this mean? The Rabbi Meir da'amar chokikin lahashlim mechayiv. The Rabbanan da Amri ain chokikin lahashlim lo mechayiv. So I will say, look at Rashi for just a moment over here. Rabbi Meir v'Rabbanan the iflugu bechokikin lahashlim perakama duyuma ube erevin. Rabbi Meir da'amar chokikin lahashlim b'mokom shiish kedei lachok hacha chayiv deroen hachor hu arba. So we'll say this is something very interesting. There is a fundamental machlokes, and actually machlokes that touches on a couple of different areas of halacha. Of literally chokikin lahashlim means, do we chisel out in order to create a complete shear? So let me give you just the simplest example of this. The halacha is that an archway is not chayiv in mezuzah. Right? If you have a rounded archway, you don't have to put a mezuzah on that because the mezuzah requires a tzuras ha-pesach. And tzuras ha-pesach means a lechi and a mashko, right? Right angles. Right angles. You have to have literally a door with right angles. So it's an interesting discussion. What happens if you have an archway? But in the archway, technically speaking, you could chisel out what we'll call a regular doorway. Because often archways hang down. So technically speaking, you could chisel out a regular doorway. So the Gemara says this is actually machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanan. Rabbi Meir holds chokikin lahashlim. Chokikin lahashlim means that we could say that if you have the archway, if you could technically speaking chisel out a regular doorway, halachically we would view that as what? As a regular doorway. And then Rabbanan say, that's very nice that you could chisel it out, but Lamaisa, it's not chiseled out. And therefore, again, we don't have any kind of imaginary chiseling going on. And therefore, if it's not a doorway, it's not chayv in mezuzah. So all the Gemara is suggesting over here is this machlokes has many different applications and ramifications. We'll also see it by Eruv. By Rosh Hashayachi, we'll get into it. By Eruv, we'll get into it. So the Gemara is something very interesting. If you throw the object, and it's above 10 tefachim, but it rests in an area it just rests in a hole. So let's say, technically speaking, there's enough area there that you could have chiseled out a makom that's arba al arba. Now, I must say, remember, it's more than 10 tefachim high, and if it becomes makom arba al arba, then what? Then it becomes a Rosh Hashayachi. So the question is, have you performed an act of hotsa'ah? Remember, I'm standing in Rosh Sarabim, I throw the object, it lands above 10 tefachim in a little protrusion in a wall. So the shayla is now, where did it land? So the Gemara says, now look at it inside. According to Rabbi Meir who holds chokikin lahash, according to Rabbi Meir who holds, then in general, we could engage what we'll call this imaginary halachic chiseling to see if the area is possible there to be chiseled out. then if you could chisel out an area that's dalet al dalet, you would be chayiv for otzah. According to the Rabbanan who hold that, no, we don't chisel out in order to go ahead and create shiurim, you would not be chayiv. We pass like the Rabbanan. We don't hold chokin lashlim. That's like, for example, for let's say for mezuzah purposes, if you have an archway, that archway is not mechuyev in the mezuzah, even if you have enough space there to be able to chisel out a regular doorway. Tanyinami Haki writes that supports this as well. If you threw an object above 10 tefachim, again, I'm standing in Rosh Zerabim, and I threw it and it lands above 10 tefachim, and it lands in a hole of any size. Rabbi Meir says, Yochai, because again, Rabbi Meir Mechayiv, in a case where you could technically speaking have enough area to chisel out the makom that's dalad al dalad. The Chacham portion, the Chacham say your potter, Amr Rabbi Huda Amrav, tell Hamislakit Asara Mitoch Arba. We'll say this is another interesting case. If you have a tell is a hill, a mound that slopes and becomes 10 tefachim high in a space of dalet amos. So if you can imagine again, the ramp is dalet amos, and the ramp that's dalet amos leads to a height of 10 tefachim. So if you what's wrong?
Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
10 tefachim high and a ramp that's dalet amos. Oh, you have a picture? Good. Okay, good. Good. So amislaki mitoch asara arba v'zorak v'nach al gabav. And what happens? And you throw an object and it lands on top of the mound. It lands on top of the mound. Chayiv. You're chayiv. Now, we'll say the chiddush over there is what? The mound may not necessarily have a space of what? An area of? Arba al arba. It may not have a space of 4x4. But again, it's a specific case of where, again, the elevation of 10 tefachim is accomplished within a ramp of 4 amos. Now, we'll say, what's that chap? That is the steepness at which it would not just be a simple thing to go ahead and walk up. It's from the eyes of halacha, that's considered to be somewhat of a steep elevation. So because it's a steeper elevation, therefore halacha lamaisa, the highest area is considered to be its own separate rishus, even if it doesn't have the makum dalet al dalet. And therefore, if you were to throw something onto it, for example, Rashi says, if you had an area of 10 tefachim high, but that had a slope leading up to it that was 5 amos long, that would be a much easier elevation to traverse, and therefore that area on top would not be considered to be a rishus ayachid if it did not have a makum dalet al dalet. So if you went ahead and you threw it on there, you're chayiv. Tanya Nami Haki writes that supports this. Mavoi sheshava l'socho v'na'ase majol rishus harabim. So mavoi that's of we'll call it level area inside of it and is a slope to rishus harabim. O shava rishus harabim v'na'ase majol l'socho, or it's the equal area to rishus harabim and there's a slope leading into the mavoi. Also mavoi eino tzarech lolechi v'lo kor. So we'll say we'll get into this in Erevin. But in a mavoi is an alleyway, right? Remember again, in the way the Mishnah sets up homes opened up into a common chatzer, and common chatzeros opened up into a common mavoi, into a common alleyway, and that alleyway led into the Rosh Sarabim. Technically speaking, you could carry in a mavoi because it's a Rosh Sayachid. Chazal said, however, you have to go ahead and make some kind of recognizable distinction, because we're concerned that if people carry in a mavoi, they may come to what? So therefore we put a lechi or a korah, either a horizontal or a vertical beam at the entrance. We have the mavoi, so that people should know that this you're now entering into a different rishos. All the Gemara's pointing out over here is, if there's a significant slope from the mavoi to the rishosarabim to the mavoi, that in and of itself is a recognizable distinction between these two rishuyos, and you would not need a lechi or a korah. The Gemara says, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Tel hamislakeit asara mitoch arba v'zarak v'nach al gabov chayiv. So also the Gemara just goes to the Chanina ben Gamliel, who says this explicitly, that if you have a mound that gets 10 tefachim high within a slope of arba amos, and you throw an object and it lands on top of the tel, you are chayiv.
Is the chiddush there that the distance is really less than arba amos?
No, the chiddush is that the highest point is not a makom dalet al dalet. Until now, we've always dealt with the idea that a shayachid has to have two things. It has to have height, and it has to have area. It has to have a height of 10 tefachim and an area of 4 tefachim. Now the chiddush is that you can have the height even without the area. As long as there's somewhat of a significant slope leading up to that height. That's the chiddush. Says the Mishnah. Zarech l'sok dalet amos v'nitzgal gel l'chutz la'am. So it's a very interesting case. Let's say I threw an object, but within dalet amos. So I'm standing in Rosh Sarabim, and I throw an object, and it lands 3.5 amos away from me, which technically means what? That I'm not chayiv midaraisa. And what happens? V'nitzgal gel chutz la'dalet amos. And what happens? It rolls out of Dalet Amos. So look at Rashi. Now, we have to clarify this case over here. Rashi says, Zarek chutz l'dalet amos v'nitzgal gel chai. I'm sorry, what is the second case? Lo shenafal la'aretz. We're not talking about a case. Well, let me read the next line first. Pacha, chutz l'dalet amos v'nitzgal gel sok dalet amos chayiv. If you threw the object outside of Dalet Amos, and then what? It rolled back into the Dalet Amos, then you're still chayiv. So the Gemara says, so look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi qualifies the case. He says, Zarek chutz l'dalet amos v'nitzgal gel chayiv, lo shenafal la'aretz. We're not talking about a case where the object actually came to rest on the land. Why? De'im kein lo tzricha l'meimar, elo sha'aruach galgalasuhu min ha'avir l'soch dalet amos. So it's an interesting case. So it can't be that the object came to rest on the earth. Because if the object came to rest on the earth, then what? Then game over. Then we're done. The truth is, once the object comes to rest, we don't really care what happens to it afterwards. So Rashi actually points out over there, we're talking about a case where the movement occurred when the item is still in the air. So again, whether it's that I threw the object 3.5 amas and the wind took it and pulled it out, or I threw it 4.5 amas and the wind took it and blew it back in. So Rashi says over here that if I went ahead and I threw it 3.5 amas and the wind blows it out, I'm potter, but if I threw it 4.5 amas and the wind blows it back in, I'm going to be chayiv. Well, obviously I have to clarify this case a little bit more. So the Gemara says, but one second, at the end of the day, the object itself never came to rest. Look at Rashi. V'halonach, chutz l'dalet amos v'amai azlinan basra. So the Gemara says, I don't understand, specifically on the second case, where I threw the object, let's say, 4.5 amas, and the object that is blown back in, let's say, is blown back in an amma, so the Mishnah says, I'm chayiv. So Gemara says, how could I be chayiv? The object never came to rest. If the object never came to rest, there was never a hanacha. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'hu shenacha gabi mashu. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no, the case is where the item did, in fact, come to rest, even just for a moment. Rashi says, shenacha gabi mashu, sha'amad k'tzas. It must have come to rest for a moment, otherwise the case can't happen. The achrakach nisgalgel, v'hu adin, imachzoso haruach ba'avir, v'akvoso ma'at, v'achrakach hichniso, d'choshiv nami hanochim, v'so gimohu. So Rashi gives two possibilities. Either it could mean that halacha l'maaseh the object came to rest for just a moment, and then what was blown back in, but it came to rest on the ground. Or possibility two, which seems to be a little bit more far removed, is that the wind actually held the item in place for a moment within 3 tefachim of the ground, in which case you'd have lavud. So either way, the point that the first one sounds a little bit more feasible. So either way, Rabbi Yochanan is saying is, you're right, the Mishnah only works if the object actually came to rest even for just a moment. Tainan, Halakha writes that supports, if you threw an object outside of Dalet Amos and the wind pushed it, and pushed the item back in within Dalet Amos, even if the wind then took it back out, potter, halacha l'maaseh, you're potter. Achzoso haruach mashu, however, if the wind held it in place for just a moment, meaning, again, that second approach in Rashi, where the wind, let's say, held it in place and it was within 3 tefachim of the ground, afa pi shechazra v'chnisaso, even if it subsequently brought it back in within Dalet Amos, chayiv. Or in other words, Rabosai, enachinami, the only case of the chayiv is when the object comes to rest somehow in the area outside of Dalet Amos. That's when you're chayiv. Amar Rava, toch gimel d'Rabbanan tzarech hanochal gabi mashu. So Rava suggests the following, that according to the Rabbanan, you, in order for an object to be considered at rest, lavud is not enough. Rather, the object actually has to come to rest, really, actually on the ground. Now, Rashi points out to the Rabbosai that which Rabbanan are we referring to over here? Remember again, the Machlokis Rabbanan and Rabbi Akiva in the sugya of Kluta Kemisha Hunchadamya. Right, that when an object goes through a Rishos, if it goes through the airspace, is it considered as if it came to rest in the actual Rishos itself? Rabbi Akiva holds Kluta Kemisha Huncha, the Rabbanan hold it doesn't. Therefore, Rav is suggesting over here that Halach Lamais, according to Rabbanan, when it comes to Shabbos, essentially we're not even going to use Lavud. When it comes to Shabbos, in order for an object to be considered at rest in a particular Rishos, what has to happen? It mamish has to come to rest on the ground. That's the only way an object is considered to be at rest in a rishos. Even lavud, which will not work in, which is a halacha l'moshe b'sinai, it works in every other area of halacha, does not work when it comes to otsa. To be chayiv for Shabbos, the object has to come to rest in another rishos. Yosim Reimar v'kamar la l'hashmaita. So Reimar was sitting and he was saying over the following teaching. Amar li Ravina the Reimar. So Ravina said to Reimar, Lav hainu masnisim. Is this not exactly what our Mishnah was saying? Right? Because after all, the Mishnah said that halacha l'maisa, if you throw the object and it goes outside of Dalet Amos and then it rolls back in, you are chayiv. V'am Rabbi Yochanan v'hushin achal gavi mashu. And Rabbi Yochanan said that halacha l'maisa, the only way it works is if the object comes to rest, which would seem to reflect the view of the Rabbanon, that halacha l'maisa, even if the object is within gimel to the ground, it's not enough. It's got to actually come to rest in order to be chayiv. Amrei miskalgil ka'amr. Are you trying to compare this to a case of miskalgil, of where the ruah, of where the wind is moving the item? When it comes to miskalgil, ain't sof l'anuach. At the end of the day, the object's not necessarily going to come to rest. Aval hai, kevan de sof l'anuach, af agav de lonach, kiman de nachdami. Aye, but I would say maybe an object that ultimately is going to come to rest, maybe even the Rabbanon would say that halach l'mais is if it's at rest, kamash blam not true. Or Rabbosai, in other words, halach l'mais, what the Gemara is saying over here is, according to the Rabbanon, whether this is a case of the ruach, or whether it's a case of you throwing an object, the halacha is going to be the same, which is what? That in order to be chayiv for chutzah on Shabbos, the object literally has to come to rest in the actual rishus. It's not enough for the object to be suspended, you know, in the air. It's not enough for the object to pass through the air. The shita of the Rabbana, which is an incredibly interesting shita, is that even lavud won't work legabe chutzah. The object must come to rest actually on the ground. Says the Mishnah, Hazorik Bayam Arba Amos Pater. If one throws in a sea, let's say I'm standing in the sea, standing in the ocean, and what happens? And I throw an object, Dalet Amos on Pater. Both said this is because a yam is a carmelis. Now, remember, we spoke about a carmelis. A carmelis is an area that on one hand has certain dimensions that makes it look like a Rosh Sarabim, but is not traveled as regularly as the Rosh Sarabim, and therefore it can't really be considered a Rosh Sayachin, and it can't be considered really a Rosh Sarabim, so it's kind of in the middle, it's a carmelis. Now both say, why the sea is a carmelis is the subject of a lot of dispute. So whether it's because the seas were not necessarily traveled by everyone, that's one possibility. Possibility number two is that even though this ocean, technically speaking, does have mechitzos, the mechitzos, because the ocean walls themselves, or the banks at certain points, that halacha l'maisa, they're not visible. We're not going to get into why. We'll get into why later. But we'll take it for granted now that a yam is a carmelis. Because the yam is a carmelis, if you throw an object dalet amos in the yam, then what? Your potter. However, im haisa rakak mayim ur shesrabim halechizbo, rakak rabosa means a shallow pool of water. Right? A shallow pool of water. If you have a shallow pool of water, and what happens? Ur shesrabim halechizbo, and the shesrabim goes through it. Hazorik lesocho dalet amos chayiv. If you throw an object dalet amos in the rakak, in the shallow pool, you're chayiv. Or notice, what is that saying? That the rakak is considered what? Like the shesrabim. Even though you have the shallow pool, it still has the din of shesrabim. The kamahi rakak mayim, what is considered to be a shallow pool? Pachos me'asara tfakim. Less than 3 tfakim. Which Rabosai is not yeah. So... 10 tfakim, excuse me. I'm sorry. Right. V'kamahi pachos me'asara tfakim. Right. So that's a little bit... So if you figure that a tefak is 3.3... I mean, if you say a tefak is altogether 3.3 inches, right? 3 feet, which actually is interesting because... That's not so shallow. But interestingly enough, okay, halach l'maisa, that's considered to be part of the Rosh Sarabim. Rakak mayim, or Rosh Sarabim halachasbo, if you have a shallow pool of water and the Rosh Sarabim goes through it, hazorik besocho dalet amos chayiv, if one throws an object in it, dalet amos yichayiv. So what's the obvious question is, the Mishnah just repeated itself twice. So the Gemara says, so I understand why the concept of hiluch was mentioned twice, because remember, we'll say, the Gemara repeats the phrase of Rishus Harabim Mahaleches Bo. So I understand why you need to repeat that phrase twice. Why? Because the Gemara says, Hakamash Malon, Hiluch Ayidei Hadchak, Shmei Hiluch, Tashmish Ayidei Hadchak, Lo shmei tashmish. So we'll say, what does it teach us? It teaches us that an area that people walk through, albeit with some level of difficulty, still has the status of Rishus Harabim. But an area that is only used with difficulty is not considered to be Rosh Hashanah. We'll say, remember we had this earlier? We had this in the cases of the pillars of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, which if they were a certain height, although they were not yet Rosh Hashanah Yachid, were also not considered to be Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Why? Because in order for an area that's used to be considered to be part of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, it has to have an ease of use. In order for an area that's traversed to be considered Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, it doesn't have to have ease of use. All it has to have is what? That it is used, that people could traverse it. As long as people could traverse it, albeit with some difficulty, it's still considered to be Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So therefore, again, the Mishnah uses the Lashon of Mahaleches Bo twice to highlight this idea. That even though, passing over this shallow pool of water is not so poshut, and does not necessarily have ease of use, because people do it, it's considered what? It's considered to be Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Ela rakak rakak trezin nilavali. But why do you have to quote the case of the shallow pool twice? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Chad b'mos hachama, chad b'mos hagishamim. One is to teach us that this is the halacha during the rainy season, and one is to teach, or just the opposite, during the summertime and during the rainy season. Why? Utzricha, utzrichi, di'it hanachada, if it would have just said the case once, hava, mina hanim b'mos hachama, I would have thought that when is the shallow pool considered to be part of Rosh Hashanah Rabbim? Only when? During the summer. Why? The avidi inchi, the miski la'akuri nafshayu. Because people might actually dafka go into that shallow pool. Why? To cool off a little bit. But no one's going to go into that pool during the winter. And therefore, again, perhaps during the winter, that area should not be considered part of the Rosh Sarabim. The ash when it be mosagishamim, and if it would have just told me that this is true during the winter, or if it would have just said it once, I might have said, when is this true during the winter? Dechevan dimitnefi lo ichpas lohu. Because one could have made the argument that, said that what happens during the winter? You're dirty anyway, right? Because remember, the roads were in mud anyway. So what does it matter if you're already filled with mud? What does it matter if you walk through a little bit of water? Aval bimos hachama lo, when it comes to the summer, where again, people perhaps are a little bit more makbid about keeping themselves clean because the roads are dry, maybe people would not traverse that particular shallow pool of water. So therefore the Gemara says, we need the Mishnah to state this case twice. Once teaches us that the concept applies during the winter, and once tells us that the concept applies during the summer. Amr Abaye, Itzrich. Abaye says you require both of these cases. Why? Excuse me. Abaye Amr Itzrich. Saka Dait Chamino Hani Mili Hecha Delo Havi Dalet Amos. Aval Hecha Delo Havi Dalet Amos. Akufi Makfile. So Abaye says, I'll tell you why you need it. Because you might have thought that this rakak is only a case of where it doesn't have an area of Dalet Amos. But once it has an area of Dalet Amos, then what? Then people will walk around it, they won't walk through it. Kamash Molon, that's not the case. Kamash Molon, that's whether, again, like the reason it states it twice is whether the area has Dalet Amos or doesn't have Dalet Amos, people will pass through that rakak. Rav Ashi gives another reason why you need both cases. Sakodait Chamina, because I might have thought, Hani Mili Hecha to have a Dalet. I might have thought that that's only true when it has Dalet. Aval Hecha de lo Havi Arba, but the place where it doesn't even have four, this is four Tfachim, Mifsa Psiale, that then people would jump over it. V'ozdi Rav Ashi, that time, Rav Ashi goes according to his reasoning. Dam Rav Ashi, Hai Man de Zorek Venach Aguda de Gamlo Mechayiv. Shahri Rabim Bokimbo. So the Rav Ashi goes according to his logic. Because Rabbi Rav Ashi says that if you threw an object and it lands Aguda de Gamla, Aguda de Gamla literally means on the plank of a bridge. But he's specifically referring to what? That the plank itself is loose. So I guess conventional wisdom said that if you have a loose plank of a bridge, better to jump over it than it is to go ahead and step on it. So I might have thought that halacha lemaisa, maybe that area shouldn't have a Rosh Hashanah because people don't trample through it. Kamashon, that even that area is considered to be an area that the rabbim goes through. So the Gemara is saying over here is that halacha lemaisa, it's just different reasons as to why the Mishnah brought down two cases of rakak. Whether it's again to teach us it applies during the rainy season, it applies during the winter or the summer. Number two, it applies to a rakak that has Dalet Amos, doesn't have Dalet Amos, or it applies to a rakak ultimately that is Dalet Amos or that is Dalet Tfachim. Either way, halacha lemaisa, what comes down to is because it's an area that the rabbim will pass through. Sometimes, depending on the size, they'll jump over it. Sometimes, depending on the size, they'll walk through it. Sometimes they may even walk around it. But halacha lemaisa, it's an area that is traversed, and even if it's traversed with some level of difficulty, it's considered to be the Rosh Hashanah. Mishnah: Hazorik minayam le'abash, minayabash liyam. If one throws an object from the sea to the land, or from the land to the sea, uminayam le'svina, or from the sea to a boat, uminasvina liyam, or from a boat to the sea, or from one boat to another boat, potter. In all of these cases, you're potter. Most of you're potter for different reasons. Yam li yabasha, yabasha li yam, yam li svina, svina li yam. That's why I remember, the yam is a caramelist. So the only time you're chayiv for hotsa is when, from Rosh Hashayachin to Rosh Sarabim, from Rosh Sarabim to Rosh Hashayachin. So if you're going from a caramelist to Rosh Sarabim, or you're going from a caramelist to Rosh Hashayachin, you're potter. Svina li svina is one Rosh Hashayachin to another Rosh Hashayachin. The Rashi points out over here that the case of Svina L'Svina is a situation of where the Svinos are owned by the same person. They're both my boats. So I'm transferring from one Rosh Hashayachin to another Rosh Hashayachin, but they're both my Rosh Hashayachin. I'm Potter. However, Svinos, Kshiros, Zubazu, Metaltalin, Mizulazu. If the boats are tied together, they're tied together, so then I can carry from one to the other. Im Einon Kshiros, if they are not tied together, even though what? They are close to each other. Nevertheless, ein metaltlin mizo lezu. You may not go ahead and carry from one to the other. So we'll have to stop over here for the day. Yeah, Rabbi Rosenfeld's scheme is after tomorrow.